Welcome to the Mr. Vincent Podcast, episode 111. I'm your host, Emmanuel Vincent, and happy Friday Eve, everybody. Well, most of y'all will hear this on a Friday morning, but nonetheless, I'm going to be courteous and wish y'all a happy Friday Eve. This episode does not focus on the NFL as the conference championship games are scheduled, taking place this weekend. The episode will be up Friday evening, early Saturday morning, but instead, this is focused on wrestling. As last week, me and the homie Daniel Daly, who I usually talk basketball with, we talked wrestling. As he has a podcast in the works, a wrestling pod, which will be on his network, the Soapbox Network. So we talked about that podcast along with everything WWE, from Vince McMahon coming back to the potential sale of the WWE, to the ongoing storylines right now and previewing the Royal Rumble. And I thought that it was appropriate to put the podcast out at this time, as the Royal Rumble is taking place this Saturday, one of the biggest pay-per-views in the company. So I felt that it was only right to save it for this moment. Overall, it's a pretty dope podcast, and we can actually get into it right now. Here it is. I guess we could begin this pod.
Sweet.
So, I want to talk to you. I haven't talked to you about wrestling on this pod, so it's good that I have a new voice for wrestling. So, what's your thoughts now going on with Vince McMahon, you know, coming back to the WWE and trying to navigate a potential sale of the company?
It depends. Like, when I first heard he was coming back, I was like, oh, this is not good. You know, his history and stuff like that in terms of where the company has been going the past couple months, you know, Triple H taking over, Stephanie as the CEO, Triple H heading of talent relations. You can see Triple H trying to figure out things and put his fingerprints on things, kind of make up for sins of the father a little bit with Vince, how he was booking things and going about things. And then you hear Vince is coming back. And then instantly you hear Stephanie McMahon is stepping down. So it's like, oh boy. So, you know, yeah, all these question marks start coming up. And I'm like, all right, so now you're hearing about all these potential buyers, right? So you hear the Saudi Arabia people might be in. You hear, I've heard, what's the guy that runs AEW might be interested. Like people, Tony Khan, yeah, Tony Khan might be interested. Disney might be interested. So you're hearing all these potential buyers. And I'm like, WWE is such an entity on its own, right? Like this is something that has been running since like late 70s, right?
Yep.
So you're like, this is an entity that has lasted, a proven entity. It's not like a startup like the XFL or anything like that. It's proven to make money. It's proven to be in the entertainment world, in the news. And I'm like, why does Vince have to come back to negotiate a sale? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not if that's his angle in terms of negotiating a sale to help and you know, help the transfer process or whatever the case may be. That sounds all good on the surface level, but it's like, what else is going on? That was my first thing. Like, what else is going on here? Stephanie steps down. Yeah, there was reported that Vince was voted unanimously back in. And I'm like, especially after the scandal, like, do you guys need all that right now? And it's like, I don't know. It's just been a confusing time trying to catch up and try to read everything and put pieces together why Vince is back. And half on top of that.
Yeah, when I first heard the news that Vince is coming back, I'm just thinking like, oh my God, like everything is going like, well, nothing's ever perfect. So I wouldn't say everything was going so
yep, of course.
In WWE, but in a sense, it's like a complete 180 for where the company was heading to, was under Vince stewardship, under Triple H, at least with the creative side.
Yes.
I felt like there's more compelling storylines. They got rid of this gimmicky stuff like that 24/7 title. All the angles that I got rid of, you felt more realism in the storyline. Then you had the whole backstage, like the backstage interactions going on, which I think is vital to like the production of the company and, yep, and the yep. shows. I feel mm-hmm. like Triple H is doing a good job utilizing that. So I'm like, mm-hmm. we really need Vince back. But now I'm hearing that, well, when I heard Triple H did say, I think it was last Friday in a talent meeting, that he's still going to be the head of creative. Now Vince might have some input, but he will have the final decision as it comes to creative. Okay.
So I'm like, okay, if that's the case, I'm not really too bothered. But at the same time, I just feel like maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't know Vince personally, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it feels like he might be in some sense of a control freak. He likes things to go a certain way. He likes to be the one in control. So I'm like, is that really going to be the case? Are they not going to clash at all when it comes to creative? I don't believe so.
Like, all the stuff that we've heard of Vince, like in different podcasts and people who talk about Vince, he likes being in control. So, yeah. I've heard that people said that he came back in order to kind of undermine things and kind of, like, if somebody else bought the company, they will put Vince in charge of that. And I'm like, well, he's already been voted back in, so that notion is gone. But all indications of Vince and how he wants this thing, his fingerprints, and you hear about all the talent that have been pushed to the side or have been given bad gimmicks, bad storylines, it's usually at the hest of Vince McMahon, right? So it's like, maybe he's not liking how things are going, or maybe that's not his vision of how he saw things. But hearing Triple H come out and say, hey, I'm still going to be in control, that was a little, especially coming out last week, that was a little relief brought on. So, again, everything to me right now, everything's up in the air right now. And especially with Royal Rumble season coming up, WrestleMania, we're on the road to WrestleMania. It's like, this is the most – this is when you need all of your ducks in a row here, especially in WWE, especially with – you don't want any injuries. You want your storylines going well. You want everything. You want all eyes on WWE. So maybe this is a way to – I don't know, some weird way that all eyes are now on focused on WWE to see what happens with Vince McMahon, to see what happens with the sale. I don't know. But it's just – it's definitely – everything is up in the air right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you listen to the episode of the last episode of the Bill Simmons podcast where he interviewed
Nah, I haven't listened to it yet. He interviewed Nick Khan. Yeah, I did not get a chance to listen to that yet.
Yeah, so but, I believe that conversation went for anywhere to 45 minutes to an hour, so it was a really insightful part. What they're basically saying, what he said in the pod basically is that, hey, while it's true that Vince is looking to sell the company, it's going to be a long project. It's not going to happen overnight. So this can be a long, drawn-out process. It's going to be plenty of people to bid. They're going to move strategically. It's not going to happen overnight. So,
And even with that, it's like, in that case, Vince is back, right? Like, he's back in his position that he originally was in, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, why is he selling it now? You know, like, if that was the case, why not keep it in the family? Why not? You know, because Stephanie was there. So, you know, if she wasn't going to be in charge or whatever the case would be, you know, that's just the – it's like, why sell it if that was the case? If the goal all the time was to sell it, then I don't know. Maybe the whole scandal thing maybe changed the trajectory of things. But it's like, why sell it if it's still in the family? You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I agree. Like, it's, the timing's a little strange. It seems like would he be trying to sell if, like, this that Bonson report from the Wall Street Journal never came out? Would he have this mentality of trying to sell the company? I don't know. Possibly not. But at the time, it's just kind of iffy to me. So let me ask you a question. I never talked to you about this, even like online or anything. What's your thoughts on the product so far under the Triple H regime, WWE?
I think the terms of storytelling has gotten a little better, especially for the mid-card titles. You have Walter making more of a presence. Gunther making more of a presence. Austin Theory's turnaround, you know, everything was kind of he was looking like a fluke, a joke, looking really bad under early on with Vince, and then Triple H took over and it was like he was burying him. Seeing his turnaround has looked good. The only question, everything has been going smoothly, right? Like, nothing's going to be perfect. Like, the only issues I really have with the regime is that it's looking a little bit like the women's division's not getting enough attention. In terms of, like, the undercard, like, the main titles are getting the push, right? Like, Charlotte just came back, which is good. I think, in my opinion, is good. We've really missed her as a driving point in the women's division in terms of being a top women's wrestler in the world, actually. But just having her back, you know, Bianca Belair's run has been pretty good. But the undercard in terms of damage control and what are we doing with these other women on the roster, that's the only thing where it's looking like we're having these 2-3 minute squash matches. And especially on Raw when there's 3 hours of television and then SmackDown, it's like you guys can find some time for them to get in there. So we'll see how – like Charlotte Flair just came back. Becky Lynch just came back. So we'll see how it goes. Like everything – not everything's perfect, but I think I feel like things are moving in the right direction. Like Triple H is trying to organize the debt, you know, from past regimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you said, nothing's perfect, but I like the direction of WWE under Triple H right now. Cause one of my things that I knocked WWE for while Vince was in control of creative is like the lack of quality matches on Raw and SmackDown. I felt like why I gravitated to AEW so much and still do right now is the fact that they have like A1 matches, a lot of A1 matches that can easily be say for pay-per-view, but they put that on network television.
With the TV. Yep.
I love it. Like last night, Bandito and Daniel Bryson. That was that probably might be the best match I've ever seen in AEW history.
Oh, okay.
Crazy sweet. Match on Dynamite last night. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, come on, man. Like, I want some of these matches. So I'm happy that we're starting to get that. And the fact that Triple H is like putting more emphasis, like making the IC title relevant and the IC title relevant again in the US title, making those titles relevant. Cause like, come on, like how the heck are you going like pay-per-views without having these titles being fought for, being contended for on pay-per-view? Like at the IC title, how many wrestlers have like benefited from holding that title? That was a stepping stone to get to where they eventually got into, like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, and those who never won a world title, like Razor Ramon, Mr. Perfect. Like, come on, like those are historic wrestlers who had the IC title. Like, how do you just bury that? Like for several like months, it's crazy.
Not only that, especially with the mid-card titles, that's a way to build guys up, right? Like, if you got like Randy Orton, for instance, like he with those runs, those intercontinental title runs early on, those kind of cemented him as a performer, right? Like Shelton Benjamin, even though he wasn't main event talent, even though I felt like he should have got a shot at times, his intercontinental runs, he had great matches. Rey Mysterio, like all these guys that touched the belt, it meant something. And then after a while, it just all these mid-card titles especially just died. Like the U.S. title, it was a joke for a long time. Like it was just passed around. I think there was the joke with the Shield, like Dean Ambrose never defended the title, you know, for like a long period of time. And it's like that's missing an opportunity to sell your product, sell a wrestler, get somebody on the right track, turn around somebody like Austin Theory, I feel like has turned around where he was kind of like a whiny baby in his run and stuff like that, losing the belt, trying to get it back, to see this now, I'm in control, I'm confident, I'm a douchebag, you know, like actually have the title and it looks like he's going to have a good run. You know, he's been in the ring with Seth Rollins. He's been in the ring with Bobby Lashley. Like he's been in those good matches there with the United States title. So those titles should be a driving force, especially for TV, especially in this time. Now that's another thing I like that Triple H has done with the U.S. title and Intercontinental title. Roman Reigns, the Bloodline, of course, I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about that. But in terms of these mid-card titles, main eventing, number one's contender match leading up for those mid-card titles, like those things still matter and should matter. And those things have been away for a really long time.
Exactly. I agree. I agree. I mean, a lot of times mid-cards, like even like back in the day, mid-cards a lot of times stole the show from like the main event.
So exactly.
Why not have like a variety? Like sometimes have mid-card wrestlers close up the show, and then you can have a main event level wrestler close the show. Like you gotta have variety. I like that we're seeing that now in WWE.
And especially even that underneath Triple H, I think he's gonna do this too. Especially when those pay-per-views I think WWE, especially with the Roman Reigns reign, of course, he's not going to wrestle all the time, right? So you got to kind of build these mid-cards up to be in that position to main event something. Like that can be looked forward to as a pay-per-view event to elevate somebody or to push the title and show the title is important. So I think that's something that they definitely are looking at and have done. So kudos to them.
Yeah, facts. To get back to Vince, right? I mean, Vince is a legend. Over like 50 years running WWE, he saw a vision before when his pops had it. It was basically a territory company where he had the vision, you know, well, I want to make this national, make this a family event, create larger than life characters that's going to attract kids. We're going to have sell out merchandise, sell out arenas, sell out toys and everything. So Vince's vision was crazy. And for WWE to be where it's at globally, is just, I'm sure he couldn't even imagine that when he took over initially. And that speaks a, by that, that speaks a lot to Vince and his hard work and his dedication. But I just feel like at some point, your time is up. And I just feel like it's kind of like past Vince. I think Vince is out of touch right now with what's going on in the world. That's just my personal opinion. I mean, Vince is 77 years old. And I just feel like, you know what? Why not just stay away and let somebody else run it? And then you had your time. You had your moment in shine for all these years. You got all your flowers. Why not just step aside?
Of course, because like Vince, let's give him credit despite all the things, you know, the scandal or whatever the case may be. He created something like he put all his chips on the table at WrestleMania. Like that was it for him. Like he put all his chips in on that. If that failed, WWF would not exist. Like it would probably be something else. Wrestlers, WCW would probably still be around, right? He put all his chips on there. So we got to respect that he believed in something. He put all his chips in the middle of the table and succeeded, won, and has built this industry that has been long lasting since I was a kid, right? So we can't ignore what he's done. He has he's hired the right people, right? In order to get it this far, he's hired the right people, put the right people in the right position. We can't ignore what he has done. But at some point, like you said, he is a little bit out of touch. And it's like, and at this time, you don't, and we've heard, like I've heard stories about this, especially on podcasts, like where there's yes men, where people just agree with Vince because he's the boss. And that's how it's supposed to go. At some point, even though you are generating money, you are able to hit a single, you're able to hit a double, you're able to hit a triple, you're able to hit a home run. The consistency there of what WWF at the time, what it was in, 97 through 2000, 5, 6, in that range there, it's not the consistency. So the level, you're probably never going to be as high as that, right? I'm not expecting everything to go back to the Attitude Era. But when you have booking decisions that make sense, you have matches that go 2-3 minutes, that's not a winning formula long-term, right? And that's kind of how AEW was able to garner some type of fan base early on, right? Like, people were sick of WWF's product, WWE's product, what they were doing.
Sick of seeing Brock and Roman decision for, like, 1,000 times.
Like, every WrestleMania, it was, like, 3 in a row. So it's like, yo, like, what are you doing long-term booking? What, like, and everyone, like Vince said this, like, you have to grab the brass ring, right? In terms of talent stepping up, guys getting better at their, like Roman Reigns did that. You know, he had the issue with talking on the mic. He is probably one of the best talkers on the mic right now in the industry because he took the time to do that. And that's fair. But it's like when you've seen people that have those talents, in-ring ability on the mic or not, whatever the case may be, guys that have risen, build a fan base, and you continuously hold them back, which we saw a lot of people go to AEW. It's like, why was that? Like, that's not grabbing the brass ring when you're holding talent back. You know what I mean? Like, and it was clear, like certain guys that should have gotten over, like Keith Lee, like this is the thing that pissed me off the most. Keith Lee is different in terms of how he moves, his body size. You got this guy wearing a leotard. You got him shaving his beard. You got him doing all these things, and it's like, oh, well, we can't find anything to him. So the answer for that is to make him look ridiculous, right? Like, why are you stripping everything that made him who he has gotten to this point and making him something because that's not what you want? You know what I mean? Like, so especially things like that. Like, there's no reason why Keith Lee shouldn't be in AEW. There's no reason why Adam Cole – I mean, Keith Lee – there's no reason why Keith Lee, in my mind, like all these people like Keith Lee, Adam Cole – the Undisputed Era, you can say, like all these people that were risen from that NXT black and gold that Triple H had his fingerprints on, a lot of those guys came to the main roster and were lost. You know what I mean? Like, and we were on the verge of that with Walter Gunter. We were on the verge of that. Like, what was this guy doing? He didn't have the same aesthetic. His name was different. What are we doing? Luckily, they turned that around and was able to save that. But it's like, there's a lot of people that fell through the cracks. There's a lot of, storylines, a lot of talent that have fallen through the cracks that were on your leadership, under your watch. And it's like, what the bottom of your product could have been as strong as the top of your product rather than just picking or choosing. You can have an overall good product and be in a better position, especially when people get hurt, when people want to take time off. And now, like, and yeah, that just speaks to one part, like with Vince. It's like you kind of lost the touch of your – the pulse of what people are into and pulse of what the industry needs, right? So, like, that's what I felt like. He lost a lot of oomph with that. Like, you lost your touch on keeping talent around, and that was one thing of the Attitude Era. He was able to, like, I always say this when I argue with people, like, even the light heavyweight title had storylines back in the day, like Taka Michinoku, Brian Christopher trying to screw him over, like, the Godfather being Intercontinental Champion. Like, everyone had something, and it felt like you were picking and choosing one or the other for a long time.
Yeah, no, that's rough. Yeah, like some of the storylines, I just wasn't feeling like with Vince with the Hulk, with the Nikki ass superhero gimmick. I thought that was corny. Elias, yeah. Ezekiel, the brother shaving the beard. Like, come on, like now you're just it's like our intelligence. We're not stupid. Come on, like what are you doing?
I've said this to people about Nikki Ash, especially when she was Nikki Cross and stuff like that. When she was acting crazy and she was part of Sanity, doing the hardcore matches, I was like, that was such a missed opportunity because, especially in a division where you have women who are fast, who are nimble, like Alexa Bliss, they fight from underneath, they cheat, whatever the case may be. I felt like Nikki Cross could have been like the Mankind of the women's division. And I'm probably sounding crazy, but like a person that's able to inflict pain, take pain, be in those type of matches, play mind games, be off the handle. That's kind of like Mankind was, Mick Foley was. Like, I'm like, that's kind of what we're – that's something different that wasn't there in the women's division. Now, you look at it, now that's Liv Morgan, right? Like, Liv Morgan's trying to be that girl of being taking high risk and going through tables and being hardcore. And it's like, that doesn't fit her personality. You know what I mean? So it's kind of – it's kind of weird. Like, I felt like that was a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Liv Morgan has kind of got dealt a raw deal so far. Like, or like her mm-hmm. brand as champion, the way it was just like strategized was pretty poor, in a sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And Liv Morgan, I felt like they tried to give her. You can sense, and I feel like this is a problem right now. They're trying to find ways to book people and stuff like that. I kind of feel like in the women's division, I feel like Alexa Bliss is supposed to be Liv Morgan, right? Like that, like they kind of fit the same profile, right? So,
yeah.
In that sense, and now they're trying to put Alexa Bliss into this Uncle Howdy. I'm pretty sure we're going to talk about that at some point. Uncle Howdy situation, which I haven't been the biggest supporter of, but I'm interested to see where it's going. So I'll say that. But yeah, I just feel like some characters are misbooked. Some people are getting pushed around and circled. So yeah.
Let's talk about WWE storylines right now and heading into Rumble, but let's take a quick break first. So, now, what do you think right now of WWE heading into Royal Rumble? You know, because this is not like Bill Simmons said it perfectly. This is like their playoffs right now. WWE heading into mm-hmm. the finals, which is WrestleMania. So, what are your thoughts right now on the story on the like storylines going into the Rumble, which is about like 2 weeks away, I believe, or a week from Saturday?
I think there's a lot of intrigue with the Royal Rumble match. I'll start with that because there's so much
intrigue in that match.
Yeah, because I feel like there's a couple of different ways they can go. Cody Rhodes is coming back, of course. He was supposed to be, I thought, and this is just me thinking, maybe I'm just thinking off the handle here. I felt like he was supposed to come in and win at SummerSlam at some point, right? Take the title off Roman. Maybe Roman takes a break and comes back. I thought that initially was the plan. He got hurt. That fell apart. Now the Royal Rumble is coming back full circle. Maybe now this is where they take that opportunity, give him that chance in Mania. Maybe that's a chance of that doing that. But they have another way to go. Like there's rumors of The Rock is creeping around. You know, like The Rock could be an option for them if they pull him in, have the big match at Mania, the ultimate tribal chief bloodline feud. Maybe that's the blow up there at WrestleMania 39 or whatever the case may be. You can also look at Sami Zayn, like a person who has been probably the MVP of the later half of 2022. Adding oomph into the bloodline, adding oomph into the undercard, the mid card, you want to say, whatever the case would be with Sami Zayn. So I feel like there's a lot of places they could go with that match. You know what I mean?
Okay, I mean, I just think it's obvious that at least for the men's, it's obvious who's gonna win. Cody Rhodes, man. Listen, I'm like, yo, listen, like this guy has got it all. He's got the charisma. He's got the All-American look. He's good on the mic. He's a great wrestler. I think that he is the one that is gonna dethrone Roman Reigns. And when he got hurt, I think it was that Hell in a Cell, right? When he tore his pec.
Yep,
oh,
yep.
His pec was already torn, heading into Hell in a Cell. And then when they set the timetable for the return, I'm like, all right, that's going to be pretty much means he's going to come back at the Rumble. So he's going to win and he's going to face Roman at Mania and he's going to beat him. It's obvious. I see it coming a mile away. So
the vignettes and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, you can go other angles. You can bring The Rock back because this is a big WrestleMania. And remember, it's in SoFi, Hollywood. Ooh, that would be big to have The Rock involved in Mania. It's only right to have like arguably the biggest star in Hollywood to be involved in WrestleMania, a company that he worked for several years, and that helped like win the Monday Night War. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
I heard a podcaster say before. I'm sorry to cut you off. I heard a podcaster say before that he thinks that when they did do at Mania, I forgot the name of the dude, but they should have Roman compete, defend both titles one night, defend against Cody, other night defend against The Rock. I'm like, that's a fire idea.
I mean, that would be intriguing, and of course, that would give each brand a title, right? Like that would give each brand a title, have their own title. Way, even if Roman wins one or loses the other, that's a way to separate the titles and do that way. People have said that. I've heard people say, "Hey, create another belt," and I'm like, "We already been down that road. Like, I don't think we want to do that again. We did that with Triple H when he had the big gold belt come back, you know." We've done that before. Like, I don't necessarily want to do that again. So the intrigue of two matches on WrestleMania, I mean, like, and that question is, if that was the question, like, if Cody Rhodes is Raw, Rock is SmackDown, whatever the case may be, if Roman loses both titles, does he go away for a little while? You know what I mean? I think that's, and especially, I wouldn't be surprised at that because Roman has been carrying the company since pandemic, right? Like when he came back.
Yeah, he definitely had been carrying the company in his back.
So it's like, I can see him taking a break until SummerSlam, right? Like I could even think, like, that's what I was saying earlier. I thought that Cody Rhodes when he came back, they were lining him up to come at SummerSlam, win the title, give Roman a break a little bit, and I think his injury maybe extended that. That's what I'm thinking in my head. But I wouldn't be surprised at two matches, them doing that, you know?
But at the same time, while I think that would be dope, that would kind of undermine the women's division for them not to have a main event, because, of course, obviously they can put on a banger of a main event on either night of Mania. So that would kind of take away from that, I think. So maybe they wouldn't do it because of that.
Yeah.
So you could have a fire match on a fire match in the women's division,
and the women have done that, right? Like Becky Lynch, Charlotte, and Ronda Rousey. Despite how that ended, you had Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. A couple of years was it last? No,
classic.
Was it last year? Two years ago. So like you have the like they're capable of doing that, and I think they have earned that right. Especially Bianca Belair. You got Charlotte returning. You have ladies that can carry that, right? So I wouldn't be surprised about that. Yeah. I mean, and then even if – no, sorry, go ahead, sorry.
No. I'll continue on because I think go to another – take another angle.
I was and I understand what you were saying about the undermining of the women right there, because then it's like if you have Cody versus Reigns, that has to close night one, right?
Yeah.
if you have The Rock on your show, you're not going to put him in the second to main event. You're not going to do that. So I definitely see how you were saying how that can undermine the women.
Or how about this? What if they somehow work it to be a triple threat match between Cody, Rock, and Reigns? But nah, I'm a diamond.
I thought about that too. I thought about how, and then people are going to like in wrestling terms. I guess people are going to say this. Like people are going to probably say, "How does Cody fit in that equation?" Right? Like he's out of the place in that type of matchup, right? So, and I thought about, I think it was 2001's WrestleMania where Kurt Angle had he fought Jericho and Chris Benoit, and he had the Intercontinental and the European title. So there was a 2 out of 3 falls match. Like the first fall was for the Intercontinental title, and the other one was for the European title. Do you want to put that in a big stage match like that? I feel like in that type of setup, you kind of have to have a winner take all. Like, I wouldn't want two falls in a match, that type of matchup.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
so it's just it's just difficult. Like, they kind of book themselves into a.
Oh yeah, so I'm still here. You say it's kind of difficult. They book something.
Yeah, it's difficult in booking because it's like Reigns has. If anyone's earned that spot to main event both nights, it's Reigns right now, right? Like he's the company for 2-3 years. If this is his swan song for a little bit. If he's going away, then I can't see him not main eventing that.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. So I wanted to ask you, what's your thoughts on the Bloodline so far? Like, as it's evolved, you know, bringing in Sokola, adding Zayn into the mix. What's your thoughts on the Bloodline?
I think it's one of the more entertaining things on TV. Like, it's basically saved wrestling, in my opinion, for me, especially as a person who watches WWE. Reigns has built himself into a monster. He has amazing matches. He's able to put on fantastic matches. The Usos have been a fixture in the tag team division for a decade, have been awesome. Solo Sikoa on his NXT run was nice. He's coming up being the enforcer role, kind of what you need in a type of a faction, a guy that can come in that's outside of, you know, the Usos jumping in a Reigns match. You can expect Sikoa to show up and help Reigns or something like that. Sami Zayn has been people were kind of getting tired of the Bloodline. He's kind of injected some juice into it, like another third wheel into the group. And you don't know which way he's going to go, which way the Bloodline's going to go against him and stuff like that. And he's worked his way through that curiosity, that confusion, and has been accepted by them. So we've seen that halfway of him getting accepted into that. And it's just like, where are they going to go from here? Especially with the Rumble, especially with the road to WrestleMania. It's like, what's the next step here?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are an intriguing faction. And I didn't realize just how much like they're like beloved until I was at Survivor Series War Games. When that music dropped and they came out, I'm like, that part was crazy. I'm like, the Bloodline is really just lit. It was crazy. Like, I'd be in the building, when they came out, everybody just got up, put the one finger in the air. I was like, okay, this is lit.
Right. People like again, that speaks to Reigns and what this group, like, they're all respectable, right? Like the blood, like literally their bloodline, their heritage to everything, like the performances Reigns has, the performances the Usos have, the impact of Sikoa, like the Bloodline in their Samoan heritage. Like, we know these guys are tough. They beat up everybody. And then Sami Zayn is probably one of the more respectable people in wrestling, like in terms of what he's done on the indie scene to main event scene. Like, they're all respectable. Paul Heyman, we can't leave him out of this. Like, his history. You can all say in their own right, like, a lot of these guys, especially Reigns, the Usos, Paul Heyman, are the legends of the group, right? Sami Zayn is still trying to find his footing on that main event. But in wrestling, in terms of indie wrestling, in terms of wrestling community, like, he's one of the more respectable guys. Sikoa looks like a badass, right? Like, I wouldn't want to get into a bar fight with that guy, right? So, like, all these guys have credibility to them and staying power. So, it's just awesome to see these guys, especially a heel faction. Because, you know, heel factions are not always fun, not always exciting. We've seen bad heel factions. We've seen Evolution where it was just like, oh, my God. How much more are they going to win? You know what I mean? But, like, in terms of what the Bloodline, even though they had moments of that where it was like, oh my goodness, how long are they going to continue to win? It's entertaining. They have great matches. It's like, we can't argue with that, right? it's a respect factor. Like, you respect their faction.
No, this is true. But yeah, that's my thing. Only my knock about the Bloodline is like, dog, like, they've been dominant for like 2 years. Like, at some point, I think at some point they have to end this sooner rather than later, this dominance, because it's gonna just I think it'll drag on a little too long, and it's gonna become a little overwhelming for the fans.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, I personally think it's over at Mania. This whole dominance is over at by Mania.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then of course, like especially during their run, there was a bunch of times where I thought the Street Profits should have won. You know, with Montez Ford and D'Angelo Dawkins, like there was a plenty of times when I thought. When Roman Reigns fought Cesaro, like I thought that would have been a crowning achievement for Cesaro, a person who's been in the company nearly 10 years, hasn't really had those main event pushes or matches. I thought Cesaro was probably one of the best wrestlers at that time. I'm like, this guy, he's like the Superman swing, the uppercuts, the toughness. Like, I'm like, okay, this guy's in position to win. He goes down. Kevin Owens, the Rumble. We're having that main event again. We're having that match again at the Rumble this year. I'm like, that's why I was like, this is 2 years ago. Like, it's the same exact match. The same exact thing. I'm like, I thought 2 years ago. I thought he should have won that. Like,
man, I thought Drew McIntyre should have won that Clash of the Castle. It was so close.
I was laughing because I was like, this just goes back to like a wrestling trope, I guess Vince started it against. Like, you don't, if you're in your hometown, you're going down.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, that was my whole thing about that. I'm like, I could see them somehow way of screwing this up and not having him win when he should absolutely win.
And just ask Bret Hart about that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So like I felt like that would have been a perfect break in that storyline, right? Like, it would have gave Reigns another thing to go after, another thing to another guy in the fight, right? And it's like, as good as Drew McIntyre is, how they built that up, and then to have him just lose it, it's like, you gotta be kidding me. You gotta be kidding me. What's another person I was thinking about? The only time, and then of course, like, I was thinking again, like, he's gotta win, right? Like, you go to England, you go to Q2, the arena that it's in. You have all these fans, especially British fans who are diehard fans of wrestling, go there. You have to have them win. So I was like, this is going to be like the British Bulldog versus Bret Hart in SummerSlam 92. He's going to go over, and then they swerve it. And I'm like, damn. So like that, again, that just speaks to the trope of like you lose at home. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, facts. So yeah, that's my only thing. And my thing too with that, like, well, especially with Reigns' dominance, is like, I feel like you're kind of undermining the men's division by making Reigns look so superior by this having this reign for 2 to 3 years, hasn't got pinned in that basically in that time span. It's like, come on, man, like you're undermining the rest of your wrestlers. But now, Bust is happy that Cody Rhodes is here now. He is the one that is like set up to the throne Reigns and then take the torch.
Yeah, like, and it's like, of course, that's what you're kind of thinking, right? It's kind of like how when you kind of felt underneath Vince, Lesnar was always lurking, right? Like, Lesnar was going to get those big shows, those big title matches, right? All these guys, like, you think of Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, who has had a resurgence. A lot of guys that are just kind of in holding patterns. Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, like, all these guys are in holding patterns until he loses, right? Like, all these guys that should be in championship matches should have that be in feuds. It's like it's all behind Roman Reigns and his bloodline right now. So kind of everybody's kind of waiting and seeing how that's going to play out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's great. So what about the women's division? What do you think about the women's division, like the main event?
I'll get into Bianca Belair. I love Bianca Belair. I love how dominant she is. She's good in the ring. She has attitude. She's doing what she needs to do as champion right now. Alexa Bliss, who I felt like they should just let her be Alexa Bliss. I'm actually interested to see how they go with this Uncle Howdy character, right? Like,
I'm not tapped in like that to know what the hell that's about. Can you please like?
So this is kind of like how can I explain this? He's kind of like the devil on Bray Wyatt's shoulder right now. He's kind of like the guy that's been in the background this whole time, that's been controlling Alexa Bliss. Sister Abigail, the Wyatt family, of course. He's kind of like the holy grail of this. Like, he's one of the characters of Bray Wyatt in his demonic personality. The way he was acting in the ring when he does the split backwards and all this other stuff. Like, this demon kind of character that's been in the background that's finally coming to light. So he's coming back now, kind of trying to woo Alexa Bliss back to that. And I'm going to be honest, when The Fiend happened, especially because underneath Vince's control, I was like, they are not going to know what to do with this character. And I was ultimately right. the way that downfall, the way they extended it, the way he dropped the title to Goldberg, I was like, this is not going to work. And then finally, they pulled the plug on it. That was Bray Wyatt's whole creation. Sister Abigail as Alexa Bliss now. He's trying to woo her back into this demon character, basically. And we're seeing this tough side to her, or this demonic side, this sinister side of her that's slowly coming out. So that's just, over time, that's coming out. That's basically what that storyline is. They're trying to tie all that together. So I'm at least more interested now to see how that ties in together. Like, does she actually win the title? Like, you know what I mean? Like Bray Wyatt, and I kind of compare him to Jake the Snake. Like, they kind of don't need the title, but they need to be causing as much havoc as possible, right? So if Alexa Bliss is going to fall into this, it's like, does she win the title, or does she just continue to just be a stepping stone for Bianca until WrestleMania? You know what I mean? So that's why, yeah, I'm interested at that.
Yeah, I can't see Bianca dropping the title until WrestleMania. Like I said, I love Bianca Belair. She's probably my favorite wrestler. Probably top three right now. I think she's a generous, one of a kind, generational talent. I was kind of mad, like how they had Alexa like beat her ass like 2 weeks ago when like she just spazzed out of Uncle Howdy thing with the dude with the mask at ringside, and then she kind of lost it and just started beating up Bianca. Like, Bianca's not gonna take a beating like that from her. Like, I feel like that was kind of like unrealistic in that
part. And that's just where the size difference is, right? Like, that's always been a problem in women's wrestling, right? So this is where the issue I have with Alexa Bliss. Like, we know wrestling's not going to be believable all the time or whatever the case may be. But Alexa Bliss should be cheating, figuring out ways to just inflict pain, inflict an injury, just randomly beating her up. No. That's a misstep. That's a misstep right there with me. I'm like, Alexa Bliss can't beat up Bianca Belair like that. Maybe she takes out her knee and then inflicts that and then just harpers on that for a couple weeks, and then we get the pay-per-view and then it's different. That's different. That's the only misstep I see with this storyline right now.
Exactly.
And that's where that's where I thought Alexa Bliss – I always thought Alexa Bliss was good as Alexa Bliss, like conniving, manipulative, smart, cunning. I thought that's how she should be. But this Uncle Howdy thing that's coming back into the – and the Wyatt family, the Sister Abigail thing. We'll see. I'm at least interested to see where it goes. But it's like, I don't think that's needed for her character, honestly. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, interesting to see how it goes. But I don't think she wins at the Rumble. But we'll see where they take it from there. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on Judgment Day?
Oh, Judgment Day, I feel like Rhea Ripley is probably the best person right now in that whole group right now. Of course, Finn Balor is probably the best wrestler, right? But Rhea Ripley, the way that she's able to create so much havoc, right? Get in there and cause havoc against the men, kind of in that China role for DX, right?
Yeah, and exactly. Perfect.
So, just really just be that person that could be physical with the boys. If the women come in, she can handle that. And I'm just interested to see ultimately what they do with her. Like, what is the end game with her? Like, this is a person who she's been one of the best wrestlers in the world for years now. She has the charisma. She has the talent. She has the in-ring skills. Where are they going with them? As the Judgment Day, I felt like originally the Judgment Day with Edge, I felt like that was the right way to go because Edge was in this. I thought that was a pathway for Edge to get to the title, right? Like to get like a title shot, to be evil, get to a title shot and do that. They took that away. Finn Balor's placed in this, and I feel like this is the disconnect with the Judgment Day in terms of Finn. Like, a lot of people stateside haven't seen Finn Balor in the Bullet Club, right? Like, him be evil, him be bad. So that was this isn't his original creation. This isn't his group, to say, his original group and stuff like that. So I feel like people are kind of mad about that. But the way they're building up right now, especially with Rhea Ripley, I feel like that's good at least. Them getting some gold, I think, is possibly down the line, the way they're in the tag team division right now. And Dominic Mysterio, kudos to him for just being a teenager that doesn't know any better, right? Like, he's just being a badass, doing all those dumb things. So kudos to them. Like, I feel like they're starting to get all their bearings, but Rhea Ripley, to me, is the best thing about that group.
Yeah, that being is. I like the Judgment Day. I called it. I thought at SummerSlam, Dominik was going to turn heel and join Judgment Day in that spot. I was wrong. It happened, like, I believe, the pay-per-view after at Clash of the Castle. Yep. I seen it coming a mile away. Dominik, he still kind of feels like he's, like, still trying to find his footing in that group, in a sense. Mm-hmm. I was dying when I seen him when he went to jail and he came back.
Yeah.
Like,
cool.
I'm like, yo, what's Conan for?
I wouldn't be surprised if that was the influence. Like, yeah, let's pay tribute to that, right?
Just like Conan. Yeah. He's like, jail changed me.
So yeah, that's
you could have sworn he did a bit. Like, you know, you probably in jail for like a weekend. Like, the heck? Like, oh man, it's funny. But yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan. I think he does have a lot of work to do on the mic, mm-hmm. and maybe that's why they're kind of like slowly easing him in on to get more reps on the mic and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Overall, I like the faction. I like the fact that we have these two factions: the Bloodline and Judgment Day. And now I believe it's Priest and Dom are gonna face off against the Usos, right?
I believe so. Yes, yes.
And I think it's at the Rumble.
I think it's next week's Raw. I think did they win? I'm not sure. I think they won the. I think they won the opportunity to fight them on Raw this upcoming week.
Raw 30. Was it going to be crazy?
Yeah, yeah. The 30th. Yeah. So that's the big lead up into the Rumble, right? Well, that's after the Rumble.
No.
It's
Monday.
Oh, is this Monday that's coming up? Okay.
Yeah. So Monday before the Rumble.
Ooh, yeah, so that's a big matchup too. Yeah, I feel like they're really lining up to do a lot of things here. I think.
And you have Bailey.
Yeah, I feel like
Bailey and Becky in the cage match.
Yeah, I feel like that. Like, and that's been something that's have been bothering me a little bit because I'm a Bailey fan, of course. And then Damage Control comes in, and this is where I feel like the women's division's kind of trying to figure out where to go. Right, Bailey as the leader, as Damage Control, hasn't really had a big win, right? Like, she was the foil for Bianca Belair, didn't win that. Okay, we understand that, like, Bianca's not going to lose the title right now. But at some point, she has to have some type of credibility, right? Like, going into this match with Becky Lynch in the cage match, it's like, is she going to win? You know, like, is there a way that they can actually have Bailey win this? I don't see them trying to book Becky Lynch weak right now. So I don't know how that match is going to go. I'm intrigued because I feel like Damage Control could be better. Like, Io Sky, I've seen her NXT work. She's a good wrestler. Like, she can – yeah, like, she can – like, she's one of the best in the world, especially coming over from Japan and stuff like that. Dakota Kai showed her evil streak when she turned on Tegan Nox, War Games. Like, we've seen a mean streak to her that we haven't seen in this Damage Control, and I'm like – we haven't really seen these true colors of the Damage Control yet, right? And I'm like, they have the tag titles. Okay, that's fine. But it's like, I'm expecting a little bit more out of this group, especially who the characters are involved.
Okay, yeah. So when they came at SummerSlam, I was confused because, honestly, I don't watch NXT. So I didn't know where they were. I know the history. But when I learned about them, I'm like, okay, this is the Triple H's people he's bringing back. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to go see a couple of work on YouTube and everything, I'm like, so I like the Dakota Kai, and I like Io Sky too as well. Mm-hmm. I like Bailey. I just feel like, to me, Bailey, I don't put it on the same level as the other four horsewomen. At least from the
point
in ring work and impact. I feel like those three are at a higher mark than Bailey. Bailey's like right below.
I feel like this is my thing. I don't feel like Becky Lynch, especially since she's come back, I don't think her wrestling has been as on par. I feel like she was working her way back with the title. And then dropped it to Bianca Belair. I felt like she wasn't ready until she dropped the title. I felt like that was her best match. And then SummerSlam came, and I was like, okay. But I feel like Bailey is a better wrestler than her. She doesn't have the charismatic ploy that Becky has. So I feel like that's the one misstep there. But yeah, I understand saying Bailey's not she's not on the same level as them popularity wise, par wise in the ring, entertainment wise. As the four women horsewomen. But I feel like if you're going to put somebody as the leader of a group, they have to have some type of win, right? They have to have some type of credibility right now. And I don't feel like her credibility is there as yet. Her history says so. But in terms of this Damage Control run, I just don't feel like it's there as yet.
Yeah. But I feel like WWE creative team, was kind of worried that if they did have Io and Dakota win the title and then have put the championship belt on Becky, it would kind of be a little like come up a little corny because you have the Bloodline on the men's side like dominating all the titles. So then you're going to have a women's faction, a women's version of that with Damage Control doing the same thing. So they probably didn't want to have those two.
Yeah, I can see that too. Yeah, yeah.
Going on simultaneously.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. Like, but you're right. They should be dominating more.
No, or at least, cause havoc. You know what I mean? Or at least just be a foil to like Bianca Belair or anybody else who's trying to be like a good person that's trying to rise up in those ranks. They should be causing havoc, and I just haven't seen that. And I feel like that's where they kind of let the women division a little bit down. That's all.
No problem. Hey, man. So I wanted before we end this pod, I wanted to talk to you about your podcast you got coming up, your wrestling pod. Did you get a title for it yet?
I'm still working through a bunch of names. Like I've had like In the Ring with Soapbox Wrestling. I've had the Electrifying Podcast, which my man Matt threw out to me and was like, "Yeah, that's a dope name." I'm like, "Is that like trademarked by WWE?" So I'm trying to figure that out. You know what I mean? Because I don't want anything like that to happen where they're like, "No, you can't do that." So I haven't found a name for it yet. I showed you the logo that I'm working on for my network, kind of similar how you're doing, like where it's just not basketball. Like you talk wrestling, you talk boxing, you talk football, you talk multiple areas of sports and entertainment and stuff like that. So that's kind of where I'm kind of trying to lean towards. But I haven't found a name for it as yet. Like I've been a wrestling fan since I was a kid. As much as a fan as I am of basketball, that is, I am of wrestling since like VHS tapes, recording. Like I say it all the time, I recorded, my family recorded 1997 SummerSlam, and Mankind jumped off, tore his shirt open, and did an elbow drop off the cage. Like that's a vivid memory in my childhood as a wrestling fan. So it's like wrestling has always been in my family. I'm pretty sure that's how a lot of people got into it, like recording tapes, watching pay-per-views with your family. So, like, I've been a wrestling fan even when it was in its dire days of that, like 2000, what, 13, 14, when it wasn't as great. I was still watching the product faithfully. Like, I don't care. Like, I've been watching wrestling forever. Like, that's not going to change. But to see, like, I just feel like there's a area for growth there, and this is something that I have a passion for, something that I really love to watch, talk about, discuss, as we've been doing here for the past, what, nearly an hour. So, yeah, I'm looking to branch into that and get that started soon, especially before the Rumble. So hopefully next week I can get all the logos and the details and have guests and figure that out and navigate that.
Okay, so are you, like, trying to, like, just, like, recap what's going on in the wrestling world, like, that week, or, like, revisit classic matches? Wrestlers, like, what's the angle you're going with?
A little bit like that. So, like, we got the Royal Rumble coming up. I'm gonna definitely try to talk about that more in depth and stuff like that, and just try to lead into that. Of course, we got the road to WrestleMania. What's going on with that? I'm trying to get back. I'm trying to get into AEW because I haven't been the biggest AEW supporter. I feel like it's WCW. I feel like a lot of stuff they do is. So it's not what I'm used to watching, right? So I'm not trying to hate it outwardly. I'm like, okay, it's just not for me, right? That's what I've came to the conclusion. But I'm trying to open that door back up. A couple guys I talked to you. You went to AEW events, ROH events recently. I listened to your podcast. To hear that, like hear you guys talk about it, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna try to open this door back up that hasn't fully closed and try to give AEW a chance and kind of just give a different new eyes on the product, right? Because other people have been watching, like my boys that I've been talking to, you and the two other guys I'm considering talking to about it and having on, have been watching that faithfully. So I'm like, okay, maybe this is something on where I'm the new guy to the product, trying to see what it is, seeing if I like it, and seeing if I'm just being a hack for WWE. That's an angle I can go on. Of course, following storylines throughout the week, there's so much stuff going on with basketball and stuff like that. So I don't know if it's going to be every week or every 2 weeks or whatever the case may be, but I'm trying to definitely do something consistent and get on the basketball level that I have, right? So that's what I'm looking forward to doing.
Okay, that's dope, man. Hey, listen, man, like, I don't blame you. Like, AEW to me, I like AEW a lot. I don't like the fact that there's an alternative to WWE. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I like kind of supporting, like, the quote-unquote little guy, the up-and-coming company. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's whack when, like, to me, like, WWE basically had no real rival for the past damn near 20 years. Now here comes AEW, who got deep pockets with the cons and everything, right? So I think that matches be quality matches on the show. I'm not the craziest about the storyline, so I think they could work on that and like
and I think
and everything. Matches are great though.
I think that's the one thing that's holding back the storylines. Like a lot of the times I'm like, does this have any rhyme or reason? And they try to do long-term story. And I'm like, I don't feel like this is working. And of course they have injuries and stuff like that. The whole blow up with CM Punk and stuff like that. And that's another thing that I feel like they're doing that are is making a big mistake, like in terms of what WCW did, which is kind of how I'm kind of out of it a little bit. Like a lot of stuff is spot fest. And I understand, of course, you're dealing with the indie crowd. You're dealing with a lot of indie wrestlers coming up to this main level product, right? That you're trying to produce. So you're giving, like, I understand that you have to have staying power, right? And that's having Jungle Boy put on great matches. I love Jungle Boy, what I've seen from him, Darby Allin, like all these guys that that fight from underneath that they don't have the size, et cetera, et cetera. You have to make up for that some type of way, right? So you're going to have these big spots. You're going to have crazy angles, okay? Like, I understand that. Like, I think it was Ruby Soho who I saw, like, that was bleeding profusely. I think that was her. I saw in the clip.
Yeah, I watched the match, but I'm pretty sure it was her.
Yeah, and I'm like, all right. Like, in my eyes, I'm like, that's not something that you should have in terms of, like, regular TV, right? That's something that you should save for a pay-per-view if you're going to have somebody bleed like that, put on a big spotlight. But we're in a new era of wrestling, right? So that might be more accepted in that field right now, staying power for her to move up. Because I feel like they dropped the ball with her coming in as well. So, right? So, like, it's just, like, all these big matches, and then I feel like a lot of their big matches don't hit. Like, John Moxley and MJF, I felt like that was good because the turn, we didn't see that happen, of course, right? Like MJF, and then this is another, especially MJF is probably, he's the champion right now, has his own style, has been that guy that has been that, we've been waiting for the title to be put on him for a long time, right? But before that, he has lost all these matches to these people that he has put over, right? He has never really won the big one until now, until John Moxley, of course, that whole angle. And it's like, it was like the steam was let out. Like, he should have won. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I felt for the longest time. Like, this guy should be champion. And then when he finally won it was like, okay, now where we're going to go with this? Of course, CM Punk is not there right now. Hopefully, in some capacity, he comes back. But it's just like, I just gotta get a feel for their booking and where they're going, I guess, and give them a chance. Like, I've talked to people, and they're like, yo, give it a chance. And I'm like, all right, I got to do that. I got to do that.
Yeah,
out of respect for wrestling, yeah.
I mean, being a wrestling fan, I just love that I can go, like, have two companies to watch and be in tune with. I love that. It brings me back to, like, the late 90s, the Monday Night War. I mean, for AEW to be a true competitor to WWE, they have to have a show that's going on simultaneously with Raw and SmackDown. But they're going in the right direction. And I see a lot of people knocking them. Like, I've been seeing people, like, knocking them online. I'm like, dog, they've been around for, like, 3 years.
They're not going to get everything right.
That's been around for 50 something years. Like, what the
hell? Yeah.
What they're doing is
like, you're not remarkable. Like, to have that staying power, of course, they have the support and stuff like that. Partnering with ROH, saving ROH, and all the backstory with that, saving ROH. It's like, these guys are trying to do something here, and I can respect that. You know what I mean? Rather than just being like a, I've never been a fan. Like, TNA at some points had great wrestling, with Kurt. Well, I was a fan when Kurt Angle was there. Like, Kurt Angle, like, had crazy matches with Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like, these guys weren't a real – they weren't a real competitor in the fight, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, with AEW, it's like, okay, Jon Moxley's there, who people have a hate-love relationship with. I'm like, at least he's getting some shine finally. Getting that main event run has probably been their most consistent guy on their roster, most consistent guy fighting there for them. So kudos to him. Kenny Omega, who was this unknown to me, unknown to stateside people who don't follow indies and New Japan wrestling and stuff like that. Kenny Omega has been able to come in and make an impact and have that. And the Young Bucks, who I've never been a fan of because I was like, that's the ultimate spot fest. Even they have grown on me. Like, I'm like, okay, they're entertaining. So they have some stuff working for them. They have some stuff building for them. And it's like,
they have the acclaimed. Probably the most popular act right now.
Definitely. They're popular. Yeah, they definitely came out and won the tag team titles not too long ago. And it's like, interested to see where that goes, because, you know, there's all the stuff with the FTR not being there. They're trying to find something to do. So it's interesting. Like, they have some guys that are creating buzz, staying power, consistency. And I think that's all you're looking for, especially in a young company, just some consistency and trying to build that up. So I'm going to definitely give it a chance to see what it is and see how it grows.
Okay. With your network you're creating, the Soapbox Network.
Say that again. Sorry.
You have a vision for that long term, the Soapbox Network?
Yeah, this is something that I've been thinking about in my head for a long ass time. Like, the basketball thing is just the first thing, of course. That's my main driving force. I love basketball probably more than wrestling and stuff like that. Like, I care more about basketball more than music. Like, other people said, that's sacrilegious, right? Like, music is everything to some people, right? Like, rap music and stuff like that. I've always dallied in rap music and stuff like that because my brother had albums. Like, outside of that, like, knowing beefs and stuff like that, I'm not the greatest at that. I know some of it. But in terms of, like, what basketball is to me, is that that's number one. And, like, I'll watch a YouTube clip on my way home, like, of a highlight or an old game or something. So that's always been that. But this, in terms of what my network, what I want that to be and what that I want that to grow into, just, again, finding passions that I like and love, like basketball, wrestling, music, common conversations, like shooting the breeze with people, like kind of that, like, we've seen the product with Joe Budden, right? Like, Joe Budden has that, his network, right?
Yeah.
Bill Simmons had Grantland, the Ringer, right? So those are kind of like the blueprints that I've sought out. And I'm like, yo, I have common interest around that. Ultimately, I want to do more stuff. Of course, we're in Massachusetts. I want to do more stuff around Boston. I want to go to, like, and especially with my basketball stuff, I want to go to open runs. I want to go talk to high school kids. I want to eventually, in my head, in my brain, have an open run in Roxbury or do something of that, get into those type of fields and branch out. And I'm kind of just talking basketball right now, but it's like in terms of wrestling, like go to ROH events, go to AEW events, when go to Survivor Series, like when wrestling comes to town, go to those events. Be a type of media, I guess, mogul or a face in that field. That's pretty much what I want to do with that network. Like, this is something.
So when you're saying go to these events, like these Survivor Series, ROH, like go there as like a media member and like ask questions, like
I mean, ultimately that would be awesome, right? Like, I just want to say, like, I've never been to a wrestling event, so that's my first thing. Like, I want to at least go to these. What? I've never been to a wrestling event. I've been to basketball games. I've been to football games. I've been to hockey games. I've been to baseball games. I've never been to a wrestling event. Man, so that has crazy. Been. That has been my biggest thing. Like, when you said Survivor Series, just waiting to the last day, I didn't believe you. I'm like, Survivor Series is going to be sold out in Boston. Like, people are going to be coming from New York and Maine. And then I see you there. I'm like, holy shit. So next time there's a Raw or a SmackDown, I'm going to try to catch. I'm going to try to be there. Like, if there's an AEW at Agus Arena, I believe, I'm going to try to be there. Like, all the stuff there. And then, again, just give reviews of that to start off. But if I can ever get into the field where, God forbid, like if the Celtics call me, hey, you want to report on something, or NBC Sports, like this is something that I've just been thinking about, like, for a long time. Like, so this is like something that's been in brewing, have been trying to find and put the pieces together. That's what this whole Soapbox Network and just talk from the cuff. Eventually, like I showed you the logo already with the couches, like eventually have interviews. Like, I've had. There's people like you're doing your photography. You have your podcast. We know some guys that cook and chef and do stuff like that. There's people that have started businesses, LLCs. There's so much stuff in Boston that's not getting shown, right? So that's another standpoint of it for me. It's like there's a lot of stuff in Boston from basketball, from a music standpoint, from an entertainment standpoint, from people that just every common day people that do good things, like people who do charities and stuff like that. There's so much stuff there that I'm – brainstorming right now, trying to figure out. And it's like, I want to do interviews with people, like figure out what people figure their pathways, especially in Boston, because, you know, not everything is on a piece of paper in front of us to figure things out. There's people that have done it, have branches that branch out, have networking connections, stuff that people don't know about, charities, free classes, stuff like that, that people I know that have done that. And I'm like, yo, like, I'm thinking in my head, do you want to share that? Do you want to talk about that? Do you want to promote your music? Do you want to promote your sports or whatever the case may be? And then from the standpoint of sports, hey, kids don't have that media training, action, talking, whatever the case may be. Like, again, like we've known people that have came from Massachusetts that have become phenoms, have been standouts, have gone overseas, have been in the league, stuff like that. Like, there's introductions to that. So I'm trying to figure out, there's people that set up open runs that we know about, right? So to get into that field of basketball, to get into that field of wrestling, like, this is stuff that I've been rattling in my brain, writing on pieces of paper, trying to put it together and trying to figure out, trying to talk to the right people, trying to figure out how can I get this going? How can I manage all this? So that's ultimately what the network is. Like, me just trying to, the passions that I have, and then try to branch it out to the world. That's ultimately the goal of that. And that's basically what I've been trying to do.
That's dope, man. I wish you the best, man. Crazy to me that you said you've never been to a wrestling event. I thought I was the only one until last year when I went to my first event at the Agonist Arena in Lowell. Not the Agonist. I forgot the name of the arena in Lowell for ROH. Mm-hmm. And then I, for my birthday, I went to AEW at the Agonist Arena in Boston. And then I did Survivor Series last year at the Garden. Hey, Mesa, listen, I'm going to tell you something. If you ever decide to go get floor seats, you'll never want to go back to anything else in wrestling. Listen, because the first time I did the ROH show in Lowell, I had probably large seats, I would say. Good seats. It was fun. But for my birthday, I'm like, you know what? I'm going on the floor. I'm getting floors for Dynamite. So I think I was in the fifth row. I'm like, yo, this is crazy. And then when Survivor Series came to town, I'm like, yo, I got to get floor seats. So I was like at row 9, though, from the floor. It's a lot of money, though. Well, at least for Survivor Series, that was a lot of bread. But I was like, you know what? Because my goal is, at least for WWE, I'm trying to go to all the four main pay-per-views at least once in my lifetime. So now I got to go to Royal Rumble. I got to go to SummerSlam, and I got to go to Mania.
Yeah, like, that's like kind of like my wrestling fandom. Like, I've never been to a wrestling event. Like,
and I'm like, I thought I was the only one who's a wrestling fan that never been.
And especially as a wrestling fan, the big four are important. Like, I want to go to those events and see it. Like, the Royal Rumble, like, I've watched the Royal Rumble since I was a kid. SummerSlam is a big summer event. WrestleMania is WrestleMania. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, as a wrestling fan, it's like, that's what I want to do. And it's like, I've been trying. I missed Survivor Series. I'm pissed about that. I'm like, yo, that would, like, I can only imagine Survivor Series. Like, I didn't get to go and do that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, like, it's like to feel that pop of the bloodline coming out, the ones, like, all that. Like, those are once in a lifetime experience. And I feel like, especially as a wrestling fan, you got to do that. You got to do that. So,
Definitely. So, my man's going to at the Rumble next weekend. He's going to San Antonio for that. I'm like, damn.
Sweet.
he got great seats too. I'm like, well, that was like a lot of money for those seats. But he made sense. Like, a lot of people said that Royal Rumble was the best pay-per-view to go to, and that makes sense. You know, the countdown for the matches,
the interaction with the fans. Yeah,
exactly. Definitely. That might be the best one to go to. So I'm gonna see where it's at next year, and I'll probably try to go to the one next year, wherever it's at.
That'll be dope.
And I don't know if you know, Ross coming to Boston during WrestleMania season, March 6th.
March 6th. Okay. Ross, yeah, I'll definitely. Boston. I'll definitely look for tickets for that. That'll be dope.
Yeah, but those Survivor Series tickets, I'm like, damn, I can't do that. I spend the most money on a ticket, but whatever. You only live once.
That's worth it, right? Like, okay. Man, like, you gotta do it.
I was looking at those SoFi tickets for Mania. What the? Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah. Me getting floored to the Mania. That is freaking crazy. I'm like, yeah. I don't know if I could do that, but man, I might just sit up high up.
Gotta start a GoFundMe.
But for all these events, I want to get those chairs, but you can only get the chairs. I got the chair with the graphic on it: Survivor Series, War Game, Boston Mass, the date, and everything.
Oh yeah, yeah, I saw that. Yep.
Yeah, so I was trying to take two out, and there was like, I'm sorry, something one per ticket. I'm like, I'm like, boy, like. Dude, are y'all really taking your job that serious?
Like, are y'all checking? Like, are you checking for people?
Yeah, man. So I want to get chairs. So I'm definitely gonna try to do floor seats for Royal Rumble next year, and maybe SummerSlam and some. But that might be a lot of money. Kind of like not as much money as Mania, but seeing that in the stadium usually, it's gonna be a lot of bread.
Yeah. Like, like I remember when WrestleMania was in the Garden, WrestleMania 14.
Yep.
98. And I was a kid, and I was like, we could have went to that. Like, you know, like back in the day, you probably could afford to be in the building. It's like now it's like, oh. Like, yeah, you can't even get in the building, man. Some of the prices they had.
My friend actually went to that Mania in 14. I was like,
that's crazy, man.
I was mad, like, yo, using the building, that's crazy. Now, but definitely one day, I have to be one day. I don't care how old I am. I got to be at Mania, like floor seats, maybe like the first row or second row. I don't care with money. Hopefully, I'll make a lot of money so I can just live my dream.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that's another avenue for all the stuff, right? Like, we want to be able to, like, in my eyes, I want to be able to do more things, maybe create more content, like, give pictures, like, videos and stuff like that. That's dope, like, to even think about that. Like, can you imagine if you were in a position to send somebody to a pay-per-view, you know, as a giveaway or anything like that? Like, another wrestling fan or a person that has been a fan of yours and stuff like that. Like, that's another thing I'm thinking about. Like, it's not just me benefiting and trying to do that. Like, I the way I'm thinking right now is just, like, do as much as I can, man. That's all I'm thinking about, man.
Right, man. I hate it, man. That's all you can do, man. Just work hard, and then, you know, the fruits of your
labor. We'll see what happens.
You'll be able to do it later on. Hot, man.
See what happens.
We can wrap up now. I appreciate you, brother. I'll probably put this episode out on Monday because I'm going to record an NFL part tomorrow. So I'm
sweet,
guessing I'll probably put this out on Monday, but, you know, you'll get the notification. I'll send you the link and everything.
Sweet, man. Thanks for having me, man. Thanks.
Yes, sir, my guy. Take care.
Take care, man.
And that is it for this episode. Salute to the homie, Daniel Daly. Good luck to you with your upcoming pod. Wish nothing but the best. Thank you to Anchor, and thank you guys for your continued support and checking out this pod. And if you haven't already, be sure to hit that subscribe button, and this pod is available just for every way you listen to your favorite podcast at Apple, Spotify, and more platforms as well. You can also keep up with me on social media, Instagram and Twitter, at Mr. Vincent 13. You can also like my Facebook fan page as well, Emmanuel Vincent. So yeah, that's all the time we have for now. Again, I will be doing a podcast previewing the conference championship game taking place this Sunday for the NFL. So be on the lookout for that. Friday evening, early Saturday morning, it should be available for y'all to check out. Until then, y'all stay safe. Take care. Championship weekend, conference championship weekend, rather. Now, these games, I think, are really, really close. You can honestly go either way with the match set. How do you feel about, like, these matches that we have slated for Sunday?
So these matchups, to me, are kind of like a kid in a candy store. So that 49ers-Eagles, I think that's, like, my favorite matchup for this weekend. But, like, that Bengals-Chiefs where it's their fourth time playing and Patrick Mahomes has lost three times in a row and just like the storylines there, the matchup is like interesting. These are both really good games. I'm happy that it turned out this way.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is honestly like probably the four best teams left that we have right now. So let's start with the first game later on Sunday, 3:00, Niners at Eagles. This is a really, really big moment for Purdy. And I feel as if Kyle Shanahan's not going to put that much pressure on him, and they're going to try to run the ball as much as they can. Just to avoid Purdy messing up.
Right. There's a lot here. There's a lot where I don't really know how. So looking at this on paper, I think the Eagles match up really well defensively. I think the Eagles match up with the Niners extremely well, and I think the Niners match up with the Eagles extremely well. Starting with the Niners having the football, I think they're going to try to do that. The Eagles are going to do their absolute best to try to put the game in Brock Purdy's hands. Mm-hmm. The Eagles this year, their numbers versus the run aren't great. But what they tend to do is they tend to do more of like a 3-4, maybe more of like a 4-2-5 kind of a deal, where they're really playing the pass and not the run as much. They have guys who can kind of control a couple of gaps. They drafted Jordan Davis. He's been healthy and back. They got Ndamukong Suh in the middle of the season as a free agent. And they want to really control those trenches as best they can by controlling like those gaps and making it a little bit more difficult for like some of those zone runs to get off. So I think they can do decently well versus that 49ers run game, where I really think that Niners team is going to be able to make their bread and butter on offense is attacking the middle of the field. So one thing that is like a boon for the Philadelphia Eagles is the fact that they're getting like their slot cornerback, Avante Maddox. They're getting him back, and the numbers with him on the field versus off the field are like very different. When he's on the field, I think they defend the slot better than anybody else in the NFL by most metrics. And then when he's off the field, it hasn't looked too good. The fact that he's practicing and most likely going to be playing this weekend is a huge, huge deal for that Philadelphia defense. But I think where I see the problem for them is Kyle Shanahan is going to use a lot of motion. They're not really good with pre-snap motion because they tend to play things straight up. I think Shanahan is going to use a ton of motion, and he's going to try to put those linebackers for the Philadelphia Eagles in space and force them to cover and throw at them all day long. And generally, it's been a very well-known thing that those Philadelphia linebackers aren't very good. So I think that's going to be their path to like success, where they're going to try to run the ball, stay ahead of the sticks, not put Brock Purdy into third and long, and throw the football at those linebackers in space. However, Kyle Shanahan can create those matchups.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. And, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, like, after watching that game, the division round against the Cowboys, to see what they were able to do, how much damage CeeDee Lamb was able to do, despite, you know, Dak had his best game, it's going to be a tough task for that secondary to deal with what the Eagles have with Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown. So if I'm not his fan, I'm a little worried about that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's... So the 49ers, where they're best at attacking is they run the football really extremely well, and they're extremely good at attacking the middle of the field. I would say the Philadelphia Eagles' weakness is the middle of the field. They did add C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Avante Maddox, where I just went over what he does in the slot. But their linebackers are the weakest position group on the team. And the one thing we know about Kyle Shanahan is he can find a way to – he'll use pre-snap motion. He'll come out in that 21 personnel package where you have two running where you have the two wide receivers and running back in. I think he's going to move those guys around like with chess pieces. He's going to come out with Christian McCaffrey. You're going to come out with Debo, Ayuk, George Kittle, Juszczyk. Move those guys around in terms of like their formations, pre-snap motion, so he can isolate, put one of his playmakers on an island versus like the linebacker. And then when Brock Purdy drops back, he's going to say, hey, that's where you throw. That's where you look. If that's open, throw it. Don't even think about it. And I think they can attack that all day. So I think they should be able to create high percentage throws doing that. And when Philadelphia tries to adjust to account for that, maybe they go elsewhere. But I think that's, like, the prime thing. They can attack the middle of the field, the San Francisco 49ers. On the other side of the ball, though, that San Francisco defense, I think they're number one in DVOA. They've been incredible all year. They're fast. They're swarming. They're really good. The weakest part of that defense is their corners. Their boundary corners are not good. And especially when it comes to defending go balls, they're one of like the worst teams in the league when it comes to like their corners defending like the deep outside throws. The Philadelphia Eagles are the best in the league at converting deep outside throws. I mean, I'm sure both you and the listeners have seen A.J. Brown cooking people on these like 60, 70-yard catches downfield. I definitely see him being able to do that versus those San Francisco corners. I think they're gonna run maybe some like GT counter, which is where you see like the guard and the tackle pulling on like the backside and then pulling to the play side for the run game. I think they're gonna also, you might also see some duo where the Eagles just straight up try to play big boy football and go downhill. I think they're gonna play like a lot of 12. They're the best team in football out of 12 formation, where you see two tight ends on the field as opposed to two running backs. Which you just talked about, just like the 21 personnel package for the Niners. Mm-hmm. I think they're gonna try to run the football out of 12, and they're gonna try to build some play action off of that and start killing them deep with the deep shots. Run the football, stay ahead of the sticks, force the Niners to play gap scheme and account for Jalen Hurts and the run fits and attack them deep and outside and make those corners earn their pay.
Yeah, exactly. Like this team is very prolific on offense. The Eagles, what they have, and then you got to account for Hurts too in the run game. I mean, we know he's dealing with a shoulder injury, but I mean, you can tell after what they did to the Giants in the division round. But then again, this is a whole different beast. It's just so hard to call this game. What do you think about? What is your realistic expectations you think people should have for Brock Purdy? See how, while he's just 7-0 as a starter, he hasn't seen a beast like this yet. Mr. Irrelevant is here on the biggest stage. He probably never played in a game this big in his life of this magnitude. So what do you think should be realistic expectations for his performance on Sunday?
I think it depends on how well the rest of the offense works around him. So the numbers, I would say like the gross stats kind of just like overall paint a picture of someone who's been playing at a really high level in Brock Purdy. Like if you didn't like know how like the film looked or just like some of the numbers that have been there beforehand, you would look at him and you'd think, wow, like I believe so. He's like 67% complete, 8.1 yards per attempt, like, he has a 13-4 TD to reception ratio, and his QB rating is 107. That's amazing. He's had games. I think he had he passed for 332 yards against the Seahawks in the playoffs. He's had really, really good games. But here's the thing: he doesn't really have to do much. If you look at the film, you look at the statistics of like quarterbacks who have had league leaders in the NFL for pass plays of like 20 yards or more. The two quarterbacks in the league who have had like the lowest average depth of target are Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, well, that makes sense though, because they don't really have a deep threat on the Niners.
They don't have to. They don't have to throw the ball that far. The entire thing with that Kyle Shanahan offense is that anybody can run it, because he's going to scheme it up where you can throw it short, and then you have a whole bunch of playmakers who are going to be able to do all the rest for you. So,
and tap on the yard after the catch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right now Jimmy Garoppolo and Brock Purdy are in top five or six for yards after catch per completion. They're near the top of the league. And then when it comes to generating big plays, they have to throw it the lowest. They're not throwing it as far as anybody. So like they're throwing it the shortest distance in the league to get to create big plays. So he's pretty much just at this point, he's like a game manager plus, honestly. He's not anything outside of maybe like a little bit better than average, in my opinion, based off what I've seen. I think the one difference between him and Jimmy Garoppolo is Jimmy Garoppolo can't throw the football deep and outside, really. It's just not his thing. He avoids it, and when he tries to do it, it just doesn't go well. Brock Purdy can at least do that.
He's a little more mobile too.
Yeah, he can execute. And I would say the one good sign I saw maybe like last week, even though he did at times put the ball in harm's way, was that Dallas defense made him play his worst possible game, and the 49ers still won the game. I will say this, though. I do think that it was very much like the 49ers defense that won the game, because they were able to pick off Dak Prescott twice. I don't think that's going to happen against Jalen Hurts because Jalen Hurts protects the football, and especially with his running ability, he's able to keep that offense on schedule and not have to make really risky turnover-worthy plays. So that's a thing where if Philly is able to stop the run, make things difficult for them throwing the ball, and they put the game on Brock Purdy where he needs to make a play, they can definitely win this game.
So watching the game last week in the divisional round, I thought Brock looked relatively decent, especially after that crazy catch that Kittle made. I think that was the momentum change in the game. And he looked really calm. You wouldn't think he was a seventh round, he was the last pick in the draft by watching him play. And look at how comfortable he was in the pocket. I would say, comfortable in the sense like he had confidence in himself. You know what I'm saying? So can that be replicated this Sunday? Possibly. But the fact I think that it's at in Philly as opposed to in San Fran makes me more hesitant to pick the Niners to win the game, even though I'm going to go with them because I thought after week 14 they are going to the Super Bowl and they might just win it all. I'm going to stick with them, but I'm not really confident.
Yeah, I have the Niners winning this game. I think the way I look at it is based on the matchups, I think the San Francisco 49ers can generate a lot of like high percentage throws. They can still generate short throws, attacking those linebackers to try to stay ahead of the sticks. I think for Philly, for them on offense, while I think their run game can still work against the Niners, I don't really think they're going to have much as it relates to the shorter intermediate areas of the field in the middle of the field that they might want to try to attack because of Fred Warner and those linebackers being so good in coverage, while they can also come up against the run. Those throws to the outside, even though they're spectacular and they generate, they're momentum changers, they're huge chunk plays. They're still, at the end of the day, they're a bit more low percentage throws compared to what the Niners can generate. So I just trust the Niners a little bit more to win this game. Plus, I also think the Eagles' defense is very much, they kind of play you straight up. And in a sense, they don't really scheme things up a bit. I trust D'Amico Ryan's game planning abilities a bit more than I trust Jonathan Gannon's. So I'm leaning with the Niners. I'm not super confident in it. I think the game will be close and competitive, but I'm going with the Niners on this one.
You got a high score for the game?
I'm thinking it's going to be 24-20, honestly.
Yeah, I got something. I'm in that ballpark. I got 22-17 San Fran.
But again, I think they're both going to run the ball, and that's going to burn the game clock a bit. And I don't necessarily see them absolutely like torching one another. But I do think the offenses will score.
You know what? I haven't seen a lot of people talk about this on TV or on the shows. Or on social media, whatever. The Eagles have had a relatively easy schedule this season, right? You would say?
Yeah, I would say that. But
so they haven't really played anything like this beat, like they play on Sunday. Because people are talking about Brock Purdy, but he hasn't seen anything like the San Francisco. I mean, he hasn't seen anybody like the Eagles as far. Well, they haven't really played anybody like San Fran.
Yeah, that's true. I think that Philadelphia Eagles offense and defense are both really good. I think maybe top to bottom, they're probably the most complete team in the league overall, especially
when you consider
like their offensive line, their defensive line, like they got players for days. And I think that they're uniquely positioned. They can attack that 49ers defense in a way that a lot of people didn't think that they could. So I think they will perform better than expected. It's just, I think maybe like that difference of one or two plays, I just trust the Niners to generate them a bit more, especially since Jimmy's out. Jimmy tends to have like those like brain farts during these games, it feels. And I haven't really seen that yet from Brock Purdy. And that might be a luck thing. That might just be a him thing. But so far, that's what it's looked like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he hasn't. I think the key is just him, just don't fuck up in key spots. And you probably can punch your tickets to the Super Bowl if he does just that.
Yeah, one game away.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, yeah. Looks like I'll take a quick break here, and then we'll talk about the Bengals Chiefs.